Hello, welcome to the talk from Lubos about the year of the Linux virtual desktop. Please a round of applause for Lubos.
Yeah, hi, I'm Lubos Sawnetsky. I'm at Collabora. And today I'm going to present about XR on Linux in general, in open source, and the Linux desktop in VR. So mostly related to my work. And thank you all for attending, for your interest in my work, and also thank you for FOSDEM for having me and considering me for the main track. This is my third FOSDEM, but it's the first time when I speak, so I hope it won't be the last time. Usually I don't put up the date on my slides, but today's date is so nice. It's a palindrome, so you can read it both ways. And it's the same in American and in normal notation. So so this is me with a funny headset. It's an AR cardboard phone holder headset. If you have any complaints or questions about the talk, please contact me on email or Twitter. So I will start with a brief crash course about what XR is, what kind of terminology we have there. Maybe I should start with asking you how many of you have ever tried AR or VR before? That's plenty, that's nearly all of you. How many of you did that on Linux? Okay, that's way less. And how many of that people that did that on Linux did that on a completely open source stack? That's even fewer. Maybe nearly none. And this is where we are working on right now, currently. So I hope that this year, 2020, will improve the situation. There are some factors that will help with that. But let's first start with this nice diagram. It's by a guy called Milgram from 94. So VR is actually quite old already. And on this spectrum, we have the real world, the world we are in right now, on the left side, and the completely virtual environment on the right side. And in between, there are some steps. So augmented realities, for example, if you have virtual elements in the real world, like annotations for real objects, and then we can go to the completely virtual world, and on the way we found the augmented virtual reality. This is when you have, for example, camera feeds or 3D point clouds of real objects in the virtual world. And this spectrum was called mixed reality spectrum. The terms I have listed the terms here again, and a more prominent term nowadays is maybe XR, which is called X-reality or cross-reality. This is also what's the term that is used in the Kronos standard, OpenXR, for example. And this is the term I'm going to go with, because it just summarizes all of these combinations of realities, of inter-reality systems. And in terms of consumer-available headsets, I would just point out three categories we have there. For example, we have the simple phone holder headsets, which run the phone's operating system, which render on the phone, and you have simple lenses in them. These are the most accessible. These are what people mostly use. Most people had contact with them. Of course, you can get it fancier than as a piece of paper, but it's as simple as it can get. And of course, we have the PC-tethered headsets. That's something for the PC gamer enthusiasts. I guess they're also more hacker-friendly, since you can use your desktop, your regular Linux desktop, and use the device as ever you like, because you're root. On the right side, I will point out the standalone headsets, which are similar to the phone thing, but like built from the ground up, so you have an embedded computer in there, maybe in a belt, or maybe also integrated in the headset. And the lenses are better adjusted for the display in contrast to these phone holders, which are more generic. This is, for example, augmented reality headset with optical see-through, so you can actually see the real world. And if you want to do see-through on a device like that, you usually have a camera where you do video see-through. In terms of tracking, so tracking is the most interesting part, I guess, when it comes to XR. The rendering is more straightforward than that. For tracking, one prominent device that also is in your phones is an inertial measurement unit, so-called IMU. It's pretty cheap and it's pretty small, so this is an example how this looks. It has multiple sensors, so it has, for example, a gyro and accelerometer. It also has a magnetoscope, so a compass, but usually that's not used in terms because of error. It's a very high frequency sensor, so compared to the optical sensors I will show you on the next slide, you get a very high frequency signal. And this is how VR, what the minimal requirement is for VR, but you only get 3 degrees of freedom out of that by itself. So that means only your head's rotation will be recognized by the tracking system, or if it's a controller, it will be only the rotation of the controller and not the position in space. If you want a position in space, you need to have optical tracking. For example, this is the work of Philip Zabel. He's implementing an open source driver for the Oculus CV1, and this is exactly this headset seen in an infrared view. So the camera is a USB camera, and a regular USB camera with either infrared filter or an infrared sensor, in best case. And this is what the camera sees. The regular person or the human eye wouldn't see this light because it's out of our visible spectrum. I'm not sure if you can see it, but there are like squares around these blobs, these so-called blobs. With primitive computer vision algorithms, these blobs can be detected. And with these blobs, the position can be calculated of the headset in space. In combination with the IMU you saw on the other on this slide before, there needs to be something done called sensor fusion. So we have the data from one sensor, from the camera, which runs at 60 hertz or something, at regular camera frame rates, or frequencies, and the IMU runs at much faster frequencies, I guess about 10 kilohertz, and this needs to be fused. So this is one style of external optical tracking. The other style is the other way around, where the camera emits the laser and the sensor is on the headset. So in this case, for example, this is the lighthouse tracking system. It has two rotors where two lasers rotate, and when they hit the sensor on the headset, you get a timestamp, and then you can calculate something similar like here. And from these techniques, you get 6 degrees of freedom. That means you can also recognize if the user moves up or down or in space. Another way of tracking, which is easier in terms of hardware, is SLAM. That's from robotics. It's called simultaneous localization and mapping. But basically, in XR, we call that inside-out tracking. That means that you have a camera in the headset, we run some computer vision algorithms to get the feature points, and then the feature points are stored in a database, and you can see where you saw if you saw this feature in the last frame. And from this, you can also calculate the position. And in robotics, it's also used for calculating a map of the real environment. The SLAM is a very popular method of tracking because it's easy to implement in hardware. But it's a bit tricky to do that in software, especially if you want things like low latency. The next point is input in VR, because not only like the rendering is interesting and gives us immersion, like stereo rendering for one image for each eye. It's immersive, definitely, and if you move your head. But one thing that gives us even more immersion, so more connection to reality, is the input in VR. For example, when I first did a VR demo back in 2013, without controllers, because it wasn't a thing back then, people asked me, oh, where are my hands in VR? I would like to see a representation of my body. And with tracked controllers, this is now more possible, and the experience can be more immersive. And I have like two different types of controllers here. The one on the left is a simple controller with just an IMU, so you just can get